CliffCentral.com.
Justice Malala is here. It's time for the Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's. And look at this. I'm actually eating a Nando's chicken salad.
Oh, see, isn't that nice? It looks so healthy.
It's
fantastic.
All right. Let's not get stuck in my dietary habits, because we could be here all day.
No.
What I'd love to know about, I posted a video of this. It was so obscene that I didn't know how to express in words what I saw. So I just put up the video of the ANC's Eastern Cape Conference, and I just said, the glorious ANC.
Yes.
And left it and let people just say what they thought. And the comments were extraordinary. All of them more or less on the same tip.
Yeah.
What happened there?
It was so sad. You know, this year the ANC's been celebrating 100 years of the birth of, what would have been 100 years of the birth of a long-standing president of that organization, and that's Oliver Tambo. Today, this week as we speak, you know, a 5 rand coin, a beautiful one, has been launched with honoring him and so forth. So you look at the heights which this organization has come from, to the new definition to a chair that this organization has given. I mean, think of what one can do with a chair, the humble chair. And you saw, Gareth, chairs, not one, not two, not 20, hundreds of chairs flying across a conference room. And you sat there and thought, these are the leaders. Remember, if you are a delegate to an ANC conference of any sort, you're a leader from your village or your township, and you go to the regional conference, then you go to the provincial conference. One of those guys throwing chairs could be a minister, could be a deputy minister in the cabinet, could be an MEC. This is what we're sitting on. For those viewers who didn't see the images, but basically, it just descended into absolute and total chaos, where one side of the room, supporters of the premier, Phumulo Masualle, basically unleashed chairs at the other side and left 9 people injured and people bleeding on the floor. But to your question, just quickly, you asked what happened there. There is almost a textbook to it now of what happens at ANC conferences. And it's this. You arrive, you look at the state of play, you say, okay, there are 2 main contenders. It's Gareth and it's Justice. I'm with Gareth. And so what are numbers? In the Eastern Cape, you had 1,700 and I think 6 delegates. You count the numbers and you say, the other side looks like it's got more delegates, voting delegates than us. So we're going to lose if we allow this thing to go its natural way and we vote and we lose. So what do you do? So from Thursday evening, the Masualle faction, if you will, or support base, kept on saying, no, we can't proceed because Gareth doesn't have his ID on him, or Justice, let's call his Lusikisiki branch and check if that branch did really send him. So the other part of the leadership said, no, everyone's got their ID. Everyone who comes in, they are checked. There are all sorts of things are put there. But even if that was the cleanest, most credible audit that was done, that conference would not have ended peacefully, because the Masualle crowd, which is the Jacob Zuma crowd, which is the Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma crowd, wanted that conference to collapse so that there is no new leadership, because the leadership that was going to emerge was going to support Cyril Ramaphosa, which it did.
So give me some insight here, as someone who's never been to one of these things.
Missed out so much.
Is there an instruction given that you must be as disruptive as possible? Does someone say, is it item number one? Comrades, when we go in, we must throw chairs.
You know, I've been trying to, bait some people to actually sue me. Andile Lungisa, who used to be the deputy leader of the ANC Youth League, has been identified by so many people. In fact, I had Stella Ndabeni Abrahams, who's a deputy minister who was at that conference. I interviewed her on Monday, and I asked her directly, were these people, your question exactly, were these people led by Andile Lungisa? And she said, yes, we all saw it. Yes, that is what happened. Meaning that he went on stage, he stood there, and he said to people, no, let's not do this. We're going to fight these guys. Well, not fight them, but essentially we will not accept. We will not accept. We will not accept. And he was the mover and shaker who went on to lead that walkout and to lead a parallel meeting in East London. So yes, basically these people are led. These people are organized to walk out and to disrupt these conferences.
So they did end up losing the day, though.
They did end up losing the day.
The conference was held to have been, there was a quorum.
Yeah.
They voted. The other faction, the Cyril Ramaphosa faction, won. The Lungisas and so on challenged it in court.
Mm-hmm.
It was also dismissed by the court because it wasn't urgent.
Mm.
So the Eastern Cape is now a Cyril Ramaphosa province. Is it that easy? Is it that cut and dried?
It's not that cut and dried. What's going to happen is that the other side, which, you know, the ANC leadership is trying to sort of hold out an olive branch to, but I think that they will be defied. I think that there will be a court challenge to this new leadership. What this new leadership did was to really introduce a new way of fighting back within the ANC. And that way was to say, if you challenge us on, oh, Gareth is not a real delegate, we will accommodate you, we will deal with it until we are satisfied that we've dealt with it. So even if it takes 2 weeks for this conference, those guys were prepared to sit there and listen to all the challenges from your Andile Lungisas and others for a week. So we could have had, if they hadn't walked out, we could have had the ANC conference in the Eastern Cape still sitting today, a week later, and through to this weekend and to the weekend after. That's what they said. We will deal with everyone until you are ready to have a free and fair conference. So when the Lungisa side realized this, they said, oops, we can't afford to sit here and until we say yes, everything is fine. So they walk out. So what's going to happen in court is most likely that the incumbents, Oscar Mabuyane and his executive, will say, we did everything we could do. We still had a 50% plus one majority in the House. And so this is the legitimate leadership. And I suspect that they now have a really strong case in the Eastern Cape. So yes, Cyril Ramaphosa is ahead in the.
So where does this leave the other camp?
The other camp is in trouble. First of all, if you think about a guy like Lebo Qoboshiane, who is an MEC in the provincial cabinet, you think about Masualle himself, who is the premier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I suspect Cyril Ramaphosa is going to say to Oscar Mabuyane, look, my brother, don't fire him. Oscar Mabuyane a few months ago said, no, I'm not going to fire anyone if I win. But they have to account to the new leadership, if there is a new leadership, or to the leadership which has been elected. So imagine that someone walks out, like I'm about to do now. I'm going to walk out of this studio. And then you and I have to have a meeting afterwards, after I abandoned you in studio and left you on your own to speak to our viewers for the next 30 minutes on your own. but I expect to work with you next door, although I walked out here.
It's like a man cheating on his wife and then expecting her to just be okay with it.
No, hi, honey, I'm home. Yeah, yeah. You know, it doesn't work like that. So I suspect that there'll be actions. I mean, if I was Phumulo Masualle, I would say, look, I'm a member of the ANC. Thank you very much. Maybe I'll just step down. But I don't think that's the way things are done at the moment in this political environment. I think that the Eastern Cape will see possibly a new premier and possibly a new leadership.
We're lucky his name is Maswele and he's in the Eastern Cape, because if he was in Gauteng and his name was Matswele, it would be a whole different world.
Look, I need to go to the gym. That's all I was saying.
All right. Let's talk about the other provinces, because the Eastern Cape is as messy as it is. There seems to at least be some kind of direction there.
Yeah.
Well, certainly there's an outcome, not necessarily a direction. KZN?
They've
defied the national ANC.
Yeah, no, they say they are going to appeal that judgment which declared them unlawful, that declared the leadership unlawful and unlawfully elected 3 weeks ago now. And so the ANC nationally, the National Executive Committee of the ANC had said, look, don't appeal, let's try to solve this let's find a political solution, they said. On Sunday, they met the KwaZulu-Natal leadership. On Monday, they met the so-called rebels. But Sihle Zikalala and his PEC, Provincial Executive Committee, are adamant that they're going to do this. And so my view is that they're showing the finger to Jacob Zuma and Gwede Mantashe and the National ANC, which means that you have turbulence there. Then you have the Free State, where there's a court challenge to the fact that Ace Magashule has been...
Dr. Ace Magashule, as of this week.
What was the name of that university again? By the way,
it's an honorary degree.
That's fine. Thank you very much. Do you want to go next door? We want to give you an honorary degree, by the way, for your services to humanity or to staying, to longevity. I mean, he has been ANC chairman in the Free State for 23 years, I think. I mean, I think he deserves an award for that, you know. And he built that website for... How much was it? 176 million.
Yeah, it was a very expensive website.
Yes, yes.
And it's no Amazon or eBay or Google.
No, that it's not. Anyway, moving on swiftly. So he's being taken to court by a certain Mr. Miffy, who is miffed that this man has been in power for months longer than he should be in office, and his central his provincial executive committee. So you have KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Free State, and in the Northwest, there's all kinds of murmurings about the Bojanala region and other regions which have also gone to court. Plus, in the Northern Cape, where Cyril has a leadership that supports him, some people are saying, oh, maybe we should try our own little bit here. But I don't think that's going to work. The conference was a long time ago. So I think that's going
to... It seems like everybody is looking at this as now we must be opportunists as much as we can possibly be, because whichever side wins, we've either got to back the winning side or we've got to gain as much ground right now as we can.
One of the things that's happening is that people think, okay, if I can be with a side that looks like it's going to win, let me extend my stay in office by disrupting things. So if you look at... If you look at KwaZulu-Natal, for example, the decision to appeal that judgment is basically saying, no, we will stay in office for as long as we can and we will tie this thing up in the courts. Eastern Cape, pretty much the same thing. We're going to go and say this was an unlawful, illegal gathering, and therefore we are still the leadership and we will stay and we will not take any instructions or any directives from this new leadership. So It's basically, I'm just going to stay in here so that I can loot as much as I can before someone else comes in.
But then my question to you is, if that's what it's like at provincial level, then what must it be like at regional and branch level?
Oh, no, it's a free-for-all. The reason why in KwaZulu-Natal we have had some say 500 over the past 8 years or so, some put the number at the lower number, but you just think about the run-up to the August 3 election last year, where in 4 months, I think 18 councillors or chairpersons of ANC branches were killed. That is exactly what's happening.
Up to 500.
That's over about 8 years since 2009.
But politicians don't get danger pay. It sounds like a very dangerous profession.
It's a very dangerous profession if you're in KwaZulu-Natal in particular.
And if you're in the ANC.
Exactly. But we've spoken about this before, and I'm really persuaded by the argument made by Professor Paulo Zulu from UKZN, who said and told the Mwerani Commission that the biggest problem is that Justice Malala can just walk in. He's got no qualifications. He's got nothing that says this man will be a good counselor. But all he knows best is to shout louder than Sia or louder than Mabale. And because he shouts loudest, he can be the local chairman. And then he bumps off Gareth, who's the local councillor. And because he shouts louder than everyone else, he becomes the councillor. That means that he's earning whatever, 30,000 rand a month or whatever it is at the moment, plus all the perks, and he sits on the tender committee, and he says, oh, my friend Joe Wilson over there owns a construction company. He must build the school. He must build the road. He must build this. And he gets a 20, 30, 40, whatever cut he gets from that. So it's murder out there, and it's extending to the provincial levels. And believe me, it's going to extend to the national level. And that is why the ANC conference in December looks decidedly in danger of not happening.
I heard something interesting to turn our attention to the opposition for a minute. I heard that the DA is so ideologically diverse at the moment that they cannot find common ground. If the ANC were to split, or the ANC were to fall to pieces, as it seems in some places it is, the DA would follow suit, because the only thing holding them together is that they're not the ANC. What do you think of that?
I think the DA has some ideological differences, but I don't think they're as deep as all that. I think that if you look at what's happening in the city of Cape Town, where Mayor De Lille and one of her MECs, J.P. Smith, have been suspended from DA activities, that is a long-standing fight between those two. It is ideologically based, because De Lille comes from the Independent Democrats, Smith is from a hardline DA background, and it's been going on for quite a long time, this clash between the two. But you are right about what is to a bigger issue. What is the opposition doing when the ANC is disintegrating before our very eyes? This is the time when the DA should be a machine and should be exploiting the differences in the ANC. If you think about the incident, the suspension of De Lille and Smith in the Western Cape, in Cape Town, one of the things about the ANC in the Western Cape is that itself is mired in fights, in factions. You'll remember that I think it's Faiz Jacobs, the secretary, was hit by someone else. I think it was one of their leaders. It's a free-for-all. So the parallel you're making is for the DA, for the opposition in general, it's unfortunate that when they should be united and taking advantage, they themselves are disintegrated.
So who's, is this a lack of leadership there? Is it a lack of direction? Is it just the party eating itself up? Has it become too successful too quickly?
I think in the Western Cape, certainly the DA has become successful over time, but I don't think it's managed. I think as the DA becomes bigger, it's finding that its own managing expectations, managing people's expectations for themselves that, oh, you know, I could be the mayor. Does JP Smith think he could be the mayor and not Patricia de Lille? Also, some of the negatives of incumbency, of being in power, will visit the DA in Nelson Mandela Bay, in Johannesburg, in Tshwane. So think about one of the issues that's been raised in the Western Cape. The special investigating unit that the city has was looking into security arrangements and fraud and corruption around tenders and so forth. Turns out one of the investigations turned towards the mayor's house and security installations there. It's starting to sound a bit like Nkandla. So they look at the security installations. Now, we don't know what they found. Maybe they found that the mayor was within her rights or that she didn't have the security installations, whatever it is. A letter is written to Musima Amane saying, oh, look, she put in huge, massive amounts of security in her house. She's corrupt. Get rid of her. So if you were not in power, you wouldn't be fighting over, Gareth has now got electric fences, two security bodyguards, and so forth and so forth. Because, well, you're just an opposition leader out there. So I think all those things, humans being humans, political parties being political parties, will come to the DA and other parties that taste power. Mongameli Bobani in the Nelson Mandela Bay. Part of the allegations is that, you know, he was in charge of a job scheme, and suddenly he was hiring a lot of people, way more than was necessary or budgeted for, and it's an allegation. But you can see here's the UDM. Bantu Holomisa always fighting against corruption and so forth, and his own guy in that city is being accused of all these things. So I think it happens to all political parties. That's why you need to change them all the time.
Well, the ANC used to be a liberation organization, then it had to become a government. DA has always been an opposition party, and then in some places it's become the government.
Yeah.
Sometimes these transitions don't suit the old ways.
Indeed. I mean, one of the things that I find we could speak about is perhaps we need to get to a point where Gareth is successful in his own right and then goes into politics to do good, not to go in and say, I'm going to make my money. I want to be a millionaire.
This is my opportunity.
This is my opportunity.
But Justice, you know what? I mean, let's just accept that being cynical, which is what we are about, most of these politicians, is probably the safest option. Because even if they're good people,
yeah,
we still need to check them out.
We need that.
Everybody thought Patricia was such a good person, and she may be. Who knows? That investigation still has to be to be conducted. When people voted for Jacob Zuma and Polokwane, maybe they didn't know he was as bad as he was, but they believed that this was a man who could change things. There must have been some who had good intentions.
Yeah, I think they I'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
We did know certain things.
Can we not touch on state-owned enterprises? It has been a great week for them because they just got another bailout in the form of SAA's $3 billion, I think.
Yes.
From Malusi, very nicely done. Let's just not talk about it this week.
Well, can we just say, for those guys who know finance out there, and my knowledge of finance is very, very dangerous. But one of the things that was interesting was that the money, that 3 billion, came from something called the National Revenue Fund.
Mm.
That thing means, according to my economist friends, my finance friends, that there is a bank account where your incomings go into it. You haven't budgeted. It's just a transmission. It's the money goes in there. Then you decide, okay, I'm going to give so much to education, so much to.
It's almost like a pre-budget.
It's a pre-budget. Yes, you're supposed to, it goes in there. Then you allocate it to your budget. So we dipped into money that we haven't even budgeted for. It means if you're an ordinary human being, you're living from hand to mouth. You've just been paid and you hubs the money and you go drinking. You're not saying, I've just been paid. Okay, so much is for rent, so much is for
petrol,
and so much so that by the 24th or whatever the day of your paycheck comes through, you know that this is what I've budgeted for. You're hubsing the money as it comes in at midnight on the 25th, and you're going drinking. That is what we did last Friday with SAA. You know what? Dudu Mieni has been guzzling billions. Just this year, you remember the 2 billion and so forth. And we keep on hubsing money that comes in on payday and giving it to her. And we think that we're going to turn SAA around. But yes, you're right. Let's not talk about.
Just one last thing that deserves your attention. Mugabe is in South Africa. He's giving advice to our president about how to run a country.
Shall I cry or shall I laugh?
Meanwhile, Zimbabwe is imploding. Grace has bought herself a 6 million rand Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
Everything's fine.
It's all good. It's worth saying that right now Zimbabwe is going through a terrific crisis. People don't have money to buy. It's called inflation, where you're sitting here with 10 rand and 10 rand can buy you a bottle of olive oil or sunflower oil or millimeal. And suddenly the value of your money plummets. So now you have to pay 100, but you don't have the 100. You're still stuck with with your 10 rand or 10 Zim bond or whatever it is he's using at the moment. So the value of money is going down. The value of real things is going up, and ordinary Zimbabweans cannot buy and they cannot access US dollars. And so you go to Zim today, people don't have food. It's a crisis is looming. Another wave of illegal Zimbabweans will be coming to South Africa. And so you look at this and you say, wow, Robert Mugabe is in South Africa. He gave some advice to our president, saying that, you know, the ANC is us, is our revolution and so forth. Man, that guy should go and fix his country. That's what he should be doing. But no one will say that. Instead, we'll allow his lovely wife to come to South Africa, and all we have to do is make sure that our electrical gadgets are safe for all of us. Otherwise, we are in trouble for sure. Anyway, it will make our listeners happy to know that Grace has bought herself a 6 million rand Rolls Royce, reinforcements to it. And that's the car she'll be using in South Africa as she comes shopping, as she comes to visit her sons. And no one can touch her because we gave her diplomatic immunity after she beat up a South African woman. What a happy place.
Thank you, Justice. Horrible note to leave things on, but there we go. That's the Burning Platform, everybody. It's brought to you by Nando's every Thursday. Justice Malala will return triumphantly next week.
Absolute pleasure. Cheers.
CliffCentral.com. Is this so? I'm a loser in my direction. So thankful for that, it's such a blessing, yeah. Turn every situation into heaven, yeah. Oh, you are my sunrise on the darkest day. Got me feeling some kind of way. Make me wanna savor every moment slowly, slowly. You fit me, tell me, love, how you put it on. Got the only key, know how to turn it on. The way you nibble on my ear, the only words I wanna hear. Baby, take it slow so we can last long.
Tú eres el imán y yo soy el metal. Me voy acercando y voy armando el plan. Solo con pensarlo se acelera el pulso.
Oh yeah. Ya, ya me está gustando más de lo normal. Todo mi sentido va pidiendo más. Esto hay que tomarlo sin ningún apuro. Despacito. Quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído. Para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito. Quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Duermo en las paredes de tu laberinto. Y hacer de tu cuerpo todo un manuscrito. Suave, suavecito, nos vamos pegando poquito a poquito. Y es que esa belleza es un rompecabezas, pero pa' montarlo aquí tengo la pieza, oye. Oh yeah. Despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído, para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito, quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Duermo en las paredes de tu laberinto. Y hacer de tu cuerpo todo un manuscrito.
This is how we do it down in Puerto Rico. I just wanna hear you screaming, ay bendito. I can go forever cuando esté contigo.
Pasito a pasito, suave suavecito, lo vamos pegando poquito a poquito.
Enseñes a mi boca tus lugares favoritos.
Pasito a pasito, suave suavecito, lo vamos pegando poquito a poquito.
Despacito. All right, very good. There's Daddy Yankee with Justin Bieber and Despacito and Louis Fonsi. It's Louis Fonsi.
Ay, 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 papi.
Okay, stop it. Behave yourself. Cliffcentral.com on a Thursday morning. It's just about 7:45. We've got a lot of news to get to. I've got some listener mail, a bunch of other stuff too. And later on today, Disrupt with Mpumintlapo. He has been chatting to three future disruptors about their different innovative and disruptive businesses this week on Disrupt, which is powered by T-Systems in South Africa. Riabetswe Ngwane is the owner of KF Designs, specializing in bags manufactured with recycled tires and other materials. Percy Maimela is a fine artist who creates portraits using salt. How's that? And Siabonga Ndwalan, who's the founder and creator of wireless Bluetooth-capable turn-up speakers. I've seen these things. They're made out of PVC pipes. I actually met the guy on Tuesday. Tune in. It's powered by T-Systems Africa. And the podcast available on cliffcentral.com. That's right. Those podcasts are available now. By the way, while we're talking about shows that are on cliffcentral.com, the Auto Central team review the latest motoring news and have a weekly F1 update. They also took a look at the Car of the Year 2018. Top 10. They looked at all those vehicles in the top 10. They discussed the recent Toyota and Mazda partnership in Tech Talk. Auto Central is brought to you by Auto Trader. The podcast now available on cliffcentral.com. Go and take a look at that too. Those guys do an awesome show, and it's getting better every time I listen. Alrighty, we've got a couple of guests popping by, but Mubs, what do we need to know in the news?
Well, I know that a lot of people's favorite tune to sing and their favorite narrative to tell is how politicians are probably some of the most corrupt and horrible people in the country. But new statistical information from a survey indicates that there are just as many horrible and corrupt people in our private sectors. Mm-hmm. Horrible people are among you people. Ooh. It could be the guy that you sit across your office desk from. The statistics from the PricewaterhouseCoopers Global Economic Crime Survey of 2016, the South African edition, mm-hmm. are quite frightening. 2 in every 3 businesses in South Africa report falling victim to economic crimes of some kind. 2 in every 3.
Does this mean fraud, ID theft?
Oh, Gareth, it means a whole bunch of things. Here are some of the biggest crimes that are committed in the private sector. Asset misappropriation.
Oh.
Procurement fraud.
Oh.
Bribery and corruption.
Oh.
Cybercrime. 1 in 4 South African companies indicated that they have lost between 1.8 and 18 million rand because of fraud and theft. Now, what is possibly the most surprising statistic is who the fraudsters acting against companies are.
Who are they? Who are these people?
45% of the perpetrators, Gareth, are the employees that these companies are paying every month.
Ha! Huh.
Yeah.
John, who sits next to you or across from you
right.
in the office, he very well could be doing some dodgy stuff at the company.
Are you saying he has no moral compass?
He has no moral compass.
Our moral compass. Of this moral compass.
Mm. Uh-huh.
The needle of the moral compass
yes.
that the president has lost its moral compass.
It actually seems like ordinary people don't have a moral compass.
Our moral compass.
Yes, thank you, Jeff.
So 45% of the perpetrators committing these kinds of crimes against companies are the employees.
Yes.
Few senior managers steal, but when they do, the amounts are much, 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 much bigger. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce estimates that given the opportunity, 75% of workers will steal from their workplace.
Shame. Shame.
Uh-huh.
Shame.
Now, according to the PwC survey, the profile of a typical fraudster is as follows. Most often,
we better take note now.
Most often male,
with
at least a secondary level education, between the ages of 31 and 40, with 3 to 10 years of service. However, studies say that when confronted with the economic reality of serious family problems, women will top the men when it comes to stealing from their employers.
You people are so sick.
The solution to preventing fraud, according to experts, is in regular checking of the financial statements, invoicing, stock inventories, rotating staff. You know, you need to be vigilant of what is happening in your company, essentially. Many employees, especially those in smaller companies and in senior positions, get away with stealing from their employers for years before they are even caught. So apparently there are a couple of red flags that you can look out for as an employer, mm-hmm. seeing as how employees make up the bulk of fraudsters.
Did you guys want to own up? Are any of you ripping me off at the moment?
Listen, no. I'm just going to...
Do you want to just level with me?
Gareth, I think this month I might have had one of those paper cups that we're not meant to have.
Mm. Oh, Ben, you know, I think we can let that slide.
Okay, just want to be open about it.
All right. See, is there anything you want to get off your chest?
That's really hard for me to say.
Yeah.
It's been really sitting on my chest for the longest time.
Is it a pen?
It is the pen. I'm sorry.
I thought there was a pen missing.
I always knew you were that one.
Come on. All right, you're forgiven of the pen. Mubs, anything you want to get off your chest? Do you have your hand in the till?
I might have taken a piece of paper from the printer and walked out with it because I needed it.
It's an epidemic. Mm. I knew it.
All right. So here are the red flags. If you are an employer, these are the red flags for your employees who could possibly be stealing from you. Mm-hmm. If your employee is living beyond their means.
Right.
Uh-oh.
Pay particular attention to people who have signing rights and who have, you know, who balance the books. Those people you need to be looking out for constantly because, I mean, they have that access right there. The employee who never takes annual leave, apparently, is also suspicious. That's a red flag.
So 22 weeks.
Like, why are you so dedicated to your work? What else are you doing here at work? The employee who's going through a financial crisis at home. Maybe they've got a messy divorce. That's frustrating them. Maybe they've got excessive medical bills.
It puts pressure on people.
It puts pressure on people. It puts ideas in people. And if people think that they can steal from the company, then they will because they'll be able to cover their medical expenses that month.
Well, that's kind of why Jacob Zuma stole so much from the country, because he's got 17 wives, 17 children, and he knew he had to take stuff.
Yes, but we're looking at companies. We're not looking at politicians.
This country is we're not
looking
a company.
We're looking at businesses.
Money comes in, money goes out, money goes out.
The employee who is first in and last out is apparently also suspicious.
Yeah, and also probably an ex-murderer.
All right. Then there are those employees who have a particularly close relationship with their client. Like, you know how with some businesses, you know, you need to maintain relationships with your clients, but sometimes that relationship becomes a little bit murky. Maybe they're a little bit too close to the client. Maybe they start doing certain favors for the client. Apparently that employee is also one to look out for because there might be some nefarious activities happening there.
Thieves.
45% of all of you are stealing from your company.
Thieves and crooks.
Lesele.
Lucille, exactly. And you know who set the standard for us?
Politicians.
Yes. So don't take them out of the equation.
No, I'm not taking them out of the equation. What I'm saying is that it would seem we're all bad.
You know what happens, you know what happens to you, lot of us. If you steal in China?
China.
Yeah,
you just disappear. They come into your village at night, they just haul you away. You never get seen again.
And then your children are literally making sneakers within 3 hours.
Mm-hmm. They're working in a sweatshop making me a very nice pair of sneakers.
Yeah.
I don't even feel bad about that. Your dad should have known better than to steal.
Oh, exactly. Okay. Yeah, that's right.
That just took a turn for the worst.
All right. I got to play something for you quickly. We often talk about these things that go on in society. It's quite a long clip, but it's worth listening to. I think this might get a lot of people thinking. Imagine this was your school principal saying these words. All right? Take a listen. See if you agree.
If every high school principal gave the following speech, America would be a much better place.
Not just America, but the world,
I think. To the students and faculty of our high school, I am your new principal and honored to be so. There is no greater calling than to teach young people.
We all agree.
I would like to apprise you of some important changes coming to our school. First, this school will no longer honor race or ethnicity. I could not care less if you are black, brown, red, yellow, or white. I could not care less if your origins are African, European, Latin American, or Asian, or if your ancestors arrived here on the Mayflower or on slave ships. The only identity this school will recognize is your individual identity, your character, your scholarship, your humanity. And the only national identity this school will recognize is American. This is an American public school, and American public schools were created to make better Americans. If you wish to affirm here an ethnic or racial identity, or a national identity other than American, you will have to attend another school. This includes after-school clubs. I will not authorize clubs that divide students based on identities such as race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, or whatever else may become in vogue in our society. Those clubs cultivate narcissism, an unhealthy preoccupation with the self, while the purpose of education is to get you to think beyond yourself. The school's clubs will be based on interests and passions, clubs that transport you to to the wonders and glories of art, music, astronomy, languages you do not already speak, and more. If the only extracurricular activities you can imagine being interested in are those based on ethnicity, race, or sexual identity, that means that little outside of yourself really interests you. Second, I do not care whether English is your native language. My only interest in terms of language is that you leave this school speaking and writing English as fluently as possible. The English language has united America's citizens for over 200 years, and it will unite us at this school. Furthermore, I would be remiss in my duty to ensure that you will be prepared to successfully compete in the job market if you leave this school without excellent English language skills. We will learn other languages here. It's deplorable that most Americans only speak English. But if you want classes taught in your native language rather than in English, this is not the right school for you. Third, because I regard learning as a sacred endeavor, everything in this school will reflect learning's elevated status. This means, among other things, that you and your teachers will dress accordingly. There will be a dress code at this school, and you will address all teachers by their title, not by their first name. They are your teachers, not your pals. Fourth, no obscene language will be tolerated anywhere on this school's property.
That's where we get
by obscene language. I mean the words banned on radio and television, plus epithets such as the B word, even when addressed by one girl to another, or the N word, even when used by one black student to another. It is my intent that by the time you leave this school, you will be among the few your age to distinguish between the elevated and the degraded, the holy and the obscene. Fifth, we will end all self-esteem programs. In this school, self-esteem will be attained in only one way, the only way self-esteem can be attained, by earning it. One immediate consequence is that graduating classes will have one valedictorian, not eight. Sixth and last, I am reorienting the school toward academics and away from politics and propaganda. No more time will be devoted to racism, sexism, Islamophobia, homophobia, global warming, tobacco, or gender identity. No more classes will be devoted to condom wearing and teaching you to regard sexual relations as no more than a health issue. And there will be no more attempts to convince you that you are a victim because you are not white or male or heterosexual or Christian. This school will have failed if any of you graduate without considering him or herself inordinately lucky. Lucky to be alive and lucky to be an American. Now, please stand and join me.
All right, so you get the basic idea. What do you think of that?
Well, obviously, it's very American focused, but yeah, there's some key fundamentals there I think everybody can take out.
I did like the way that he. There's one thing that appealed to me, because I'm not into this whole patriotism, nationalism thing. I could care less for that stuff. But I did like the idea that so much of the stuff that's going on at the moment in society, on social media, or everywhere else, is around me, 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 me. It's this narcissism.
Yeah.
I thought that was a very good point. And if you can think outside of yourself, you tend to be more successful in the world. You tend to be able to consider other people more. So while I disagree with some of those things, I think he makes a couple of good points.
Especially in your formative years. You can go and in your adult way, become narcissistic. You can do all those kind of things, but you've got to have a grounding of something.
Yeah, and if you start doing that stuff early, I think it can poison you.
Well, yeah, exactly. You've got no basis for what's really out there. Because you're meant to go to school to get a comprehensive education.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Not just like a, you're special.
You want to hear an email from somebody?
Sure.
This is very nice. This is from Tanya. Dear team, this is my downloads folder. It goes all the way back to the very first show you guys did. I feel very proud of my collection of podcasts. It got me to thinking about something that makes me very, very excited. One day when I'm old and frail, I'm going to spend my pension money on enough wine to last me until the end of my days. My plan is to sit somewhere quiet and bespoke and just listen to your podcasts and drink wine. In doing so, I will be able to relive almost every day of the year, 40 or so years ago, in all the important events and funny moments in South Africa and the world that are being documented by you daily. And for this service, I thank you. Please explain to me again why you do not charge a monthly subscription fee. Every morning when I pass Rivonia, I get excited about the day's podcast. Meeting another regular listener is like hearing your home language in a foreign country. There is an ah moment of like-mindedness between you and the other person. I always dance with BG fingers to the beat of Ben's sports music. Even though I don't watch any sports, I download the Bounce Show because I enjoy listening to Ben. The burning platform with that Agent Justice, the reality check, the songs about Mabale. There is just so much of these things about the show that are part of my life. It is actually incredibly special to me. Not paying for this unique and special service feels like an injustice. I like paying for value because it gives me joy to reward someone for something great. I want to pay you, damn it. That's in a Gary Player voice, apparently.
Ross, any voice really of authority.
Thank you for making my day every day. To everyone on the team, in a very private and creepy way, you're all my best friends, says Tanya. Isn't that nice?
That's nice.
Cool.
And then some more hate for Ben.
Oh, what do you mean more? It was nice instantly earlier.
No, this is someone else who says, if Ben carries on this way, we've got to start calling him a little bitch for a week. Okay, all those in favor? My wife is a serial laminator in her office. Everything in our house is laminated, I swear. We even have paper placemats that have been laminated. That is how she steals from her boss.
Okay. Yep, there you go. There you go.
And people want to know, there's a lot of conversation going on online about the President Jacob Zuma monument.
Yeah, well...
Is there anyone in any part of the world, I mean, whoever, even if you're his son or his uncle or his cousin, is there anyone who wants a Jacob Zuma monument? Can we just do a quick whip around the studio? Let's see. Ben, yes or no?
In a paintball area, yes.
Okay, Sia?
I thought Ngandla was enough of a monument.
That's
okay.
A good point. Very good. Mubs, would you like to build a Jacob Zuma monument?
Yes. My president gets to have anything he wants. Why not monument? Just add, keep adding to the list. Why not?
All right. I hope you're being sarcastic there,
Mubs. He gets to have everything that he wants. Why not a monument? What's going to be the difference now? What?
Amanda, would you like to help build the President Jacob Zuma monument?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay. Well, that didn't go so well for him. So far, only Mabali is saying it would be a good idea. I'm sorry then, Mr. President. Just based on our very small and limited research body here, it's not going to happen. We are not going to give you a monument.
There's no money that I'm going to be paying back.
Well, it's too late. It was unveiled yesterday in the Northwest by the Northwest.
Who authorized this? Oh. Super Zuma?
Supra, of course.
Supra Mahumapelo.
Absolutely. There's an amazing photo of them together standing in front of the monument. And it's placed where Zuma, along with other MK recruits, were arrested by apartheid police back in 1963 as they were making
That's
their way to
Botswana. That's where the difference comes.
Yes.
He gets to have everything that he wants.
Number one says he is humbled and immensely honored to have been part of such a courageous legion of then young freedom fighters.
Huh.
I know.
Huh. He does. He just gets what he wants. Huh?
Yeah. I don't know why any of you bother.
Yeah. Not even worth it.
Deal with it.
Meanwhile,
he's having the time of his life.
Did you see what the opposition was doing as hashtag Jacob Zuma Monument was trending? The DA, for example, was tweeting out different visuals of the area in the northwest where this monument is up, highlighting the fact that there's no running water, but millions were spent on building this monument. And so now they're marching to Saxon World.
Can I just suggest that please, you don't prove you're better by like throwing feces at things like this. So please let's not have anyone do that. Because you know what happens in this country. People get upset and then they like set fire to stuff. The monument's built. The money has been spent. For good or for bad, let it be a reminder of this horrible period in our history. Because it's been horrible. It's been bad for everybody. There's been no economic growth. This man has embarrassed this country in every way possible. I don't think we should tear it down. We should keep it there as an ugly reminder. Because we're going to forget. You know what will happen. Like, we were so unhappy with Thabo Mbeki, right? Oh, he's so... We need to replace this guy. You remember? Everyone was going, such a centrist, such a technocrat. Such a problem, this Thabo Mbeki. Well, at least he wasn't running the country into the ground. And who wouldn't want him back now in place of this guy?
I have two hands up.
Yeah, exactly. So if we had a statue of him around to remind us of the days of Thabo Mbeki, we would at least have some perspective and some history, you know? Don't tear it down. Let it serve its purpose. Don't you agree?
Yeah.
It is. It's there
it's
already.
It's too late.
Yeah.
It's too late.
Just leave it there.
Yes.
Right, correct. Okay, when we come back in a moment, we will meet, first of all, we're going to have Debbie in here. You remember Debbie, our correspondent in Washington? We've
yes.
spoken to Debbie a couple of times. She's a friend of ours. She's popped by from the USA, and she's brought along a very interesting guest, a guy called Elliot Ferguson, who's the president and CEO of Destination DC. Now, wouldn't you like to visit this city? It is such a beautiful place. It's got to be one of the most magnificent places. From almost any angle, this place looks sexy. Washington, D.C., immaculately laid out by a Frenchman, could you believe it?
Ooh.
Yeah, Frenchman laid it out. He based it on the position of the Capitol, the position of the White House, the position of the Lincoln Memorial, the Jefferson Memorial, all of these different things that are such a part of that monumental city. And it really is. There are so many beautiful buildings. It's just... immaculate in its scale. And remember, this was built in the early 1800s, late 1700s, early 1800s. That city was laid out. It's magnificent. I've been there twice, and I just love the place. It's magnificent to watch. The people there. Yeah, forget about Donald Trump for a second, will you? Because I know that's what you're thinking. You're thinking of this orangutan in the White House. You don't need to be thinking that.
We'll look past that.
Yes. Try to turn your attention to everything else that makes Washington such a great place. I mean, some people say it's the capital of the free world, you know? We'll talk about that with Elliot Ferguson, the president and CEO of Destination DC. That's all coming up next. Are you having a happy day? Are you having a good start to your Thursday?
Is it raining?
It was just a little while ago. Sia is worried about the rain because he's going to Opikopi this weekend. You know what that is?
Trust me, that place is so dirty, you need the rain.
No.
So anyway, you'll get clean.
Yeah.
It's already bad, the fact that I'll be spending, two and a half hours in the car in this weather. But then I now have to repack again. Because then
if you should go. You've got a bad attitude about this. Maybe you shouldn't even go.
I would like to not go.
See, on behalf of everyone that's going to this thing, I don't think you should go. You'll be a nightmare to be around.
I already have a faux fur long coat for the occasion.
You have a faux fur I gotta see this. You're gonna look like Dirty D. You're gonna look like Dirty D from Pudetang. That's what you're gonna look like.
Gosh. Just be spinning around creating a dust storm there.
Do you have a cane as well?
No.
You need a cane.
I'm thinking of just wearing like a string vest underneath.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh my god.
And the shortest of shorts.
Are you not going to Elton John's pool party? Is that not where you're going? It doesn't sound like
you're going. I mixed up my invitations.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. All right, when we come back, we'll have our guest.
What is what, but they don't know what is what. They just...
Here's the theme song for Sia's outfit for the weekend.
A tiger, don't lose no sleep. Don't need opinions from a shellfish or a sheep.
CliffCentral.com